It is 6:09 and I'm calling the meeting to order. So we'll begin with a board roll call. I'm Paul Ashton, the chair, present.
Bobby Strang, member, present.
Morgan Kane, present.
Kurt Vondren, present.
Great. All current board members are present. It doesn't appear that we have anyone from the public here for a comment period. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Great. So if you guys want to take a moment to review the minutes for approval, that would be great as well.
I would move approval of the May minutes.
Is there a second?
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The board meeting minutes are approved. Just keep chugging along. So, old business.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first item and the only item under old business, it's also in our board member report that I'll get to in a minute, but I wanted to give you an update on the presidential inauguration report and recommendation that the board had made. The recommendation was that an independent review of the operations on inauguration day be conducted. $150,000 was allocated by the district council to do that. We were authorized, because of the nature of that review, we were authorized to do that under a sole source expert services contract. We have had a contract approval of the National Police Foundation to conduct that review. The National Police Foundation is an organization headquartered in D.C., right by DuPont Circle. They have done other national reviews for other police departments in other cities. One of the most notable ones, recent ones I can think of, is the terrorist shooting in California San Bernardino terrorist shooting. They were hired to do an independent review of that incident, and they've done other independent reviews of larger mass-scale incidents. So we did engage in discussions with them, and they, because we felt that they would be one of the best partners we could think of, and especially since they're located here, and they do not have any, they've never done any contracting work with the district before. So it's going to take a little bit of while longer to get them into the District of Columbia contracting system as a vendor and contractor, but that process is in its final stages now. And they're going to start the review probably in the next few weeks, Bob, right after October 1st. And October 1st, by the way, also is the new fiscal year when we have the money available in our funds to begin the review. As part of the contract terms, we have asked them to complete their review by the end of the calendar year, by December 31st. That's the goal, anyway. And at some point, we'll have a much more in-depth presentation about it. And we're going to be working with them on a regular, ongoing basis as they proceed. The first course of action that they're going to be doing is going to be collecting all the documents and evidence, and also they will be identifying various subject matter experts. What they do is they recruit and bring in subject matter experts from wherever around the country that they feel they need to conduct this particular review. We will ensure that none of those subject matter experts have a conflict with MPD or with the District of Columbia and approve them. Mm-hmm. We've had that written into the contract. And then once the subject matter experts are approved and on board with the Police Foundation, they will begin their work of reviewing the inauguration activities. So that's the overall general plan and the status of where we are on it. Does anybody have any questions on old business? We'll continue putting this on the old business agenda and keep everyone updated at our next meeting about where we are at that point in time. Alicia, did you have anything to add to that?
No.
Okay. And that's all I had in old business.
So how about the agency report? I almost jumped to new
business. Sure. agency report is in your folder. I wanted to highlight a few things. First thing is our next meeting is Thursday, November 16th, if you could put that in your calendars.
Oh, actually, we need to amend that. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
My organization is having our 20th anniversary event that night, and I am in charge of that event. So, and it's at 6 p.m. Yeah, I will invite all of you. You're all more than welcome to come. But I cannot do that night.
All right. So, let's look at,
You said
it's
going to have to be the week before.
It can't be the week after, because that's Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And the week after that.
So that's the ninth is the, I can't do that either.
Yeah, I can't do the ninth.
I'm flying to Portland.
2 weeks later, after Thanksgiving.
Would the 30th work for everyone?
Yeah.
That work for you?
Yeah. Yep.
You sure?
Mm-hmm. I think so. Unless I'm missing something, it's not on my calendar, don't I?
All right. So November 30th it is. Sorry.
So at least as of tonight then, anyway, in case something else comes up.
Yeah, and let us know if there's a conflict and we can...
We'll have to make sure that the meetings read that the next meeting is on November 30th, 2017 at 6 p.m. That's why we put that on there, to make sure that there's no conflict. That's good. I wanted to briefly mention that as of about an hour and a half ago, we have 750 complaints for the year, an all-time world record high, and we'll be talking about that in more detail when we get to the status of our investigations, but that's one of the critical issues updates that we need to be cognizant of. The next section is our reports and policy recommendations, and I wanted to mention that we had some of our staff members that are here, Doug and Matt and Danielle, were all part of the monitoring team last Saturday. We had a total of 8 people here, several teams that monitored the multiple rallies on the Mall, and one at Lafayette and one at Farragut. Everything was very peaceful. We noted very positive interactions between MPD and the people that were attending the rallies. It was very calm. There was no major incidents. As you may have known from reading the paper, there were zero arrests made with respect to the rallies. So we were very pleased with that. And we really didn't have any information that would warrant a report. So, Alicia, you want to follow up on it?
Yeah, so I have some photos here that Doug has put together. So I'll pass these around. You all can look and just see what we were seeing on the ground. Basically, as Mike said, we saw very good interactions, positive interactions between law enforcement and the First Amendment assemblies. The people leading the organizations, we saw several of them conversing with MPD officers. Particularly there was, I was out on monitoring as well, and we witnessed, there was a march that was in the streets, and MPD was blocking off streets for them, and each time before they crossed an intersection, the leader of the march spoke to the MPD officer who was at that intersection to make sure it was safe and okay for the group to cross, so that was a very positive thing to witness. We did see on the Mall, MPD was... out in force. There were several officers visible, but they were in their uniforms, not in riot gear, and there were plenty of white shirts on the scene as well. So they were at the ready, but they were not in any way intimidating or threatening anybody, which was good to see. But they were certainly on alert. We did notice there were a couple of groups that popped up that seemed to be possibly Antifa or other related groups that could potentially cause problems, and we saw that MPD officers took notice and were keeping an eye on them, but were not interfering with them in any way or blocking them, their movement or anything like that. So everything we witnessed was very positive, and I think the reports that we've seen play out in the media over the past couple of days and the reports that have come from MPD themselves have all been very positive and have all been consistent. So it was all very good. But I want to point out the good work that Doug did and the rest of the team who was out monitoring. Everyone put in a lot of effort. We were out for several hours on Saturday from about 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. So it was a long day, but well worth it, even if nothing happened.
Some great photos as well.
Thanks, Alicia. With respect to going on in the board report then, with respect to outreach, we've had a lot of outreach events. The one I wanted to just call to your attention that I'm pretty happy about is that the NAACP National, the DC chapter, has joined us as a community partner. We've been working with them for the last several months. Nikish and I have been to their board meetings. We've had meetings with them, and they have officially agreed to be our community partner now, so we're pretty happy about that. And with respect to press and media coverage, we did receive a significant amount, what I call significant amount of media coverage for our monitoring of the rallies. But also I sent this around to all the board members too. You're aware too that there was a lawsuit filed with respect to blocking passage, and there was an article in the Washington City paper just a few days ago about our blocking passage policy that the board passed and how it fits in with some other, with the lawsuit and the previous lawsuit that was filed regarding it. We have had no staffing changes over the past 3 months.
That's great.
I wanted to make a note of that. And I would say that.
I just, sorry to interject. I just wanted the board to be aware that I did a presentation with Hansel, one of the investigators at the Fairfax. Sure. Civilian oversight, I can't remember what they call themselves now, civilian oversight panel, which is a newly formed, the new oversight body in Fairfax County, so,
thanks for mentioning that, so Hansel Aguilar, one of our investigators, is a civilian board member in Fairfax, has his side gig, and,
I hear it pays immensely.
Yeah, the board that he's,
more than we make,
right?
About the same.
About the same,
yeah. We're a much better board here. So that board asked if Representative Paul could speak to their board, and he was gracious enough to go over there for one of their board meetings and give them a little briefing on what we do, and I heard it went pretty good. So that's a good thing.
For the most part.
Yeah. And we also met with them. We actually sat down and dinner with their auditor when we were at the NACLE conference.
Mm-hmm.
So we had good conversations there and our outreach with other oversight agencies, a brand new one, in our neighboring county. With the next thing I wanted to mention was training and conferences, just to highlight a couple of those. I'm on page 4 of the board report. We had a visitor from Australia. There is a new oversight agency in Australia that is basically taking over the function of internal affairs, and they will investigate every incident of use of force independently of the police departments, the national police forces, provincial police forces in Australia, and they will be the only investigator. And they will also have power to prosecute officers for misconduct, similar to what our local district attorneys would do in the United States, and they reached out to us to find out more about what we do. And the individual listed, Alistair McLean, with that came here was actually a ambassador's emissary in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
He for
lived
a time
here several years ago.
Right,
yeah.
Before he was appointed to this national appointment in Australia to head this new oversight agency. So he actually knew about us.
Mm-hmm.
From his time in D.C., and that's why he reached out to us, and he made a visit all the way from Australia to sit down. We sat down and talked to him about what we do and how we do it, and had a very good interaction with him. So, and then I also wanted to mention the Chicago Police Department and their oversight agency came out here. That was in response to their, they are or are not, it's not determined yet, under a consent decree. either way, there's monitors and evaluations going on, and they were asked by their DOJ investigators to come out here to DC and see what we do. And so they did. So that really tells us that, and should tell the staff members here that, you know, we are, despite what you might think, we are really looked at as one of the agencies that are conducting best practices and oversight, because these are the kinds of places that we get visits from. And then
I have no doubt that we're looked upon that way. I just, I'm of the age that I remember as a young child, very young child, watching the 1968 Democratic Convention and hearing the mayor of Chicago announce that the Chicago Police Department is not here to create disorder, it's here to preserve disorder. So I'm glad the Chicago Police Force is seeking our guidance.
Yes, and we had, again, at the national conference we were at last week in Spokane, we had interactions with some of the people from Chicago, too, and it was very interesting about what some of the things going on there.
Mm-hmm. So they made a point of introducing themselves and, you know, making contact and letting us know that they would be in touch.
Yeah. And we also consulted with them when they first formed the board. I don't think I put this in the previous report, but when they were first forming a fact-finding committee within the by the Chicago City Council, we did have a series of conference meetings with their fact-finding council that was appointed by the mayor, and I was a part of those conference calls as far as best practices and how the ordinance should be structured in Chicago. So we were part of that process too. But we can't take full credit because we'll see how it works. The other thing I wanted to mention about the contacts was we had Chief Maupin come in from the D.C. Housing Authority Police. He hasn't been here in a number of years, and we were at the conference at the time, but he came in and met with the rest of the staff, and we had a very good interaction with D.C. Housing Authority Police, something we haven't had for a while. We've also had some investigators arrange for going on ride-alongs to find a little bit more hands-on what they do. Alicia, were you here when he was here?
I was here.
Tomorrow was here.
You were here.
Yeah,
okay.
I was not.
It was right before we
did. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You have anything to follow up on with that?
No, it was great that he came in. He's actually only been the chief there for a few years, but he really gave us a lot of good information and a good history. It's interesting to me, a history of the department, and I hadn't realized that it was actually a division of MPD. Did you know that? It was a division of MPD before it became its own department.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, it's not under MPD now.
Yeah, no. It was in like 98.
Longer. He's probably been there longer than a couple of years.
Oh,
he
maybe
retired
it's been,
directly
yeah.
as our 7th
right.
District Commander
mm-hmm.
and went over there.
Yeah.
And we've
so maybe
been through
been
a couple of
times.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
probably been about 5 years.
Yeah, okay.
So you've never been over here.
He's never been over
here.
No, but he was great. And for him to come directly and not even, you know, send, Deputy Chief Reese or whatever, who we normally have contact with, it was great. And also they've been very, he was talking to us about, he was really interested to know from us what we're seeing and our suggestions and ideas. And I know that they're working on updating their general orders and stuff. So he was very, very open and just accessible, and it was really good.
Nice. Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing I wanted to mention on those contacts and outreach is that we had five people total go to the National Conference on Oversight and Legal Conference in Spokane last week. Actually, it was 2 weeks ago, I guess.
Last week.
See, I'm still not used to the time.
I know.
It's only 3 hours.
Right.
And I'm still not used to it.
Yeah.
But I did get back in time to do the protest monitoring. But I was privileged to give a presentation on police oversight at one of the groups. They asked us to do it. And then Mona also gave a really informative presentation on body-worn cameras, because we are, you know, an MPD, I should say, is the largest police department, with one of the largest departments with 100% deployment, earliest deployment. And there was a lot of interest in that thing. At the conference, by the way, there's about between 450 and 500 people from around the country that showed up, from police departments, from oversight agencies, city council members, you know, all people that are interested in doing this. So there was a very good turnout.
Mm-hmm.
And Mona did an excellent job preparing and talking about body-worn cameras, generated a huge amount of questions that you're probably still getting.
Yes.
And then our senior investigator, Jessica Rao, is not here tonight, did an excellent job on the mental health aspect of handling citizen complaints, because we, as for those of you that have known, that have been here for a little while anyway, we've had the trainers come in here. We've adjusted our policies for dealing with mental health consumers. Everybody in the offices went through the our version of CIT training to deal with it, and we've adjusted things to the point where, again, they wanted us to come out and talk to other oversight agencies about how to handle the mental health issues that we deal with every day in this office with our complaint process. So that was a really good presentation too. So I wanted to mention those three things. All right. The dismissal schedule has been adjusted. The one you have is the correct one, but since Jamira Burley resigned, we had to readjust it a little bit, so follow the one that's in the board report, if you will, unless there's a problem, talk to us, and we'll work on that. But we always appreciate everything that you do while you're on your rotations. And Kurt, I'm not sure how it happens, but almost every year at the end of our fiscal year, you're on the rotation. So.
Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking about that.
Yes.
you know the drill for the next 2 weeks.
Yes. I got a special delivery the other day.
Yes.
All right.
So.
Now.
September 30th was the last day.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he gets his Monday.
Hmm.
Okay.
For
right.
this week.
Right.
You won't have to worry about it.
Oh, okay.
You're off the list.
In other words.
All right, I'm good with that.
Count your blessings.
Okay. Investigation status. Chief Investigator Mona Andrews, proceed, please.
I did these numbers on Monday, and like Mike said, we're already up to 750. We also, on our closures, are doing a great job. And even since we've already, just because we all just got back from being gone a week, we've already closed a bunch more cases. Commander King got most of hers in. So
I've sent back everything. That
oh
I
yeah.
Had.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's what I mean. So I just
I
meant when I did.
Last,
yeah,
like, no.
when I did this,
check, yeah.
That was outstanding. The 23, but that what I'm saying is for forwarded PCB, that number is way down too. So we're catching up on everything. So, but you know, our numbers our intake is much higher, as you can see. It's still around 80% higher, including contacts are much higher. But we are keeping up with it. Largely because of body-worn cameras, I think, because even for the dismissals, most of those were summary dismissals, as you guys see. A lot of either failed to cooperate or box ones, twos, threes, where you guys are seeing these, where, you know, being able to view the body-worn cameras helps us make decisions earlier in the process, and then helps us also not to have to interview as many officers for the cases that we do find issues,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, those are in decisions, policy training, and other cases, then, you know, those require fuller investigations. But even on those, you know, we're finding that we don't necessarily have to interview, you know, witness officers in cases where there's an allegation about whether an officer said something or provided their name and badge number. We have it on camera. We know the answer. We can send it forward without having to ask five different people on the scene, did you hear this? Was it said? Was it not said? That's really saving a lot of time as well, even on those cases that we're sending for complaint examination or policy training. So that's how when I was doing a drill down this week of really how we're able to keep up, I think largely because of that, we're, you know, able to truncate a lot of the cases where there's clear answers, and also have something I brought up in my panel about just having more confidence in our decisions because we have more evidence and clearer evidence and less he said, she said. I mean, we're still going to have those cases and you see those, but less of that. So that is really an advantage. And also just being able to know sooner who the officers are and who's involved. I mean, I know that's helping MPD, I'm sure, too, but that's another way that we're able to get through our cases quicker and have more confidence in who's involved and who did what. So I just wanted to point that out is, you know, and we'll be talking about that probably more in our annual report as well, but just as kind of a prequel to that, that's what we're seeing. And also, I think you'll notice that the referrals to MPD are much higher. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that we're taking all of the complaints now. So that's cases where before MPD would keep those. I mean, they know even when they send them, like it's probably coming back because mm-hmm. it's not in our jurisdiction. And so I think that does reflect a lot of that number being higher. And then also, you know, with the admin closures being higher, a lot of those are just these out-of-state, you know, Florida, California complaints like that, even though we have it clearly on our website saying, and on the form saying, this is our jurisdiction, people still, you know, file complaints. So I think that combination of, having the online access and then getting the additional complaints from MPD, as we should.
Do we look at, because I know we say that the numbers have increased mm-hmm. so much, and I can only assume, well, I'm sure that it's because we're referring everything over to you all now. Mm-hmm. Do we keep a tally of how many are actually coming from MPD out of this total when we...
we keep track
when
of
we
that.
Have this, okay, so mm-hmm. it's not something we see. Okay,
right.
I got you.
But we keep track of that. We're tracking.
And are we seeing that... the increase or the jump, is it from the MPD referrals or is it that you all are getting that many more directly coming into OPC complaints?
Both. I think a lot of it, you know, we really started seeing the jump because it coincided both with our online, because it just happened to be that when we started accepting online complaints, it was about the same time that we were getting the NERAC went into effect. Mm-hmm. And we're getting complaints directly from MPD and getting all the complaints. And so that coincides with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that is both those numbers are higher. However, I think it doesn't account for all the jump, but it does account. It does seem to coincide timing wise with a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But the number of cases that we're actually getting assigned and investigating, that percentage does seem to be a little lower. So for 15 years, it was consistently around 2/3, mm-hmm. around 62% to 68% of cases that, you know, we got, we would actually, were in our jurisdictions and we would do some kind of investigation on. Mm-hmm. So far this year, it appears to be closer to 50, just over 50%. Okay. So, and I think, there's less cases actually in our jurisdiction or actually getting assigned for investigation. And it looks like I attribute a lot of that to the referrals back to MPD mm-hmm. And kind of the higher admin closure, like complaints we're getting from about Texas police and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And so that seems to be, since those numbers are higher, I mean, so that's another reason why, that's another kind of anomaly this year, even though our complaints are so much higher,
right.
less are actually
being investigated
because they're not in our jurisdiction.
Okay. And we count when we count the total of the complaints, we're still counting the ones that we're getting that are not within the jurisdiction, like those Texas complaints. So we count those in those numbers?
Yeah, the number of complaints received. That's
just total,
that's,
no matter
that's
where
if we get
falls.
A complaint form
gotcha.
On our form, we have to review it for jurisdiction. And then for the closures, that's, you know, by type. So the cases that aren't really being investigated are the ones we're referring to you guys. We're referring to rapid resolution, withdrawals. Most of those are really early withdrawals, admin closures, and then referrals to other, meaning like other departments in the D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
So like if it's something for you, we determine it's U.S. Park Police, we're going to send them to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A local jurisdiction, whereas admin closure, if it's, you know, across the country, you know what I mean? But if it's like Park Police, Secret Service, you know, something what we would consider local.
Tell me a little bit more about that model. So the ones that come in, and I know this can't be done universally,
mm-hmm.
but do the bulk of them get referred to some other agency? And I'm more, I don't know what the Park Police has or Secret Service, I think it's just the agency.
Mm-hmm.
But like we now have in Fairfax, a
mm-hmm.
Sister agency. Do ones that mistakenly come in from Fairfax, do rather than just say you're not in our jurisdiction, do we tell them,
yes,
here's the Fairfax?
Absolutely.
And
in all those, we do. We say, even if it's Texas, even if it's coming in and it's from a certain town and they give us enough information, we give them the specific.
We do. Okay, so
yes.
we pretty much do that universally.
Yeah, universally, yes.
Okay, so no
yes.
one, it's just like, sorry, you're not
right.
us.
Right, no.
We give every
mm-hmm.
non-jurisdiction complaint coming in. If there is one, I mean, for
yeah.
some agencies,
yeah.
I guess for some localities.
But we'll still give them, like, internal
the
affairs.
Internal
we'll,
affairs
exactly.
Yeah.
We'll do
there's
internal
always
affairs.
That, right.
Exactly.
We
always give them
through
contact.
Through NACO, we pretty much know
mm-hmm.
what exists.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
we're pretty comprehensive
right.
when there is a
yes.
something equivalent to us.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's
yeah.
good to know.
So we always give them, in the letter, we always give them contact, a place, to, you know, contact information or say this. We don't have jurisdiction, but you're complaining about the Plato, Texas
right.
Sheriff's Office, and here's a contact number for them.
Okay.
And we wouldn't forward it to the La Plata Sheriff's
Office? No. We forward it to MPD and DCHAPD. And then we give them contact, and then we give them the contact information. There have been a few times where a local police department, like if it's because we do have some contacts or if they contact us or something, then we'll send it to them, you know, to Park Police or whatever, especially if a complainant says, oh, it's Park Police, can I get a copy of mine to send, you know, then we'll
but that's the exception.
That. That's the exception.
Yeah.
So but we do direct referrals to MPD, to the two agencies that are within our purview, and then we give everyone else contact information. So we do go the extra mile. Investigators do look
that
up and go the extra
yeah.
mile
yeah,
to
mm-hmm.
send that. And we do report that in our annual report too. We say that we, you know, for those other cases, we give additional information. And we even will do that in contacts. If they don't send anything, we even do that for contacts, and we include that in our case management system. So even if they don't send a complaint form, but somebody calls us and says, I have a complaint about, you know, LAPD, you know, then we'll say, this is who you contact.
Is it pretty scattershot, or are there a couple jurisdictions which have the bulk of the out-of-jurisdiction complaints?
It's scattershot.
I mean, there'd be no...
it's random.
I'm just waiting for our website. We could say, if you live in Fairfax County, here's the link. Fairfax, that really would.
I don't know that we've gotten any from Fairfax County actually this year, at least that pop out to
okay.
me.
Right. So there's no.
So even locally, it's not. It's you know pretty random.
Right. So a website redirect wouldn't really help.
Right. No, and because I think that a lot of those they think it's MPD. Most of them are DC. Happen in DC,
okay.
and they think and
other
like
police jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they just don't know that it's Park Police instead. Like, a lot of people don't know, you know, the
right.
uniforms or whatever.
Right.
And
a web
so
link
they may
wouldn't
not...
help, because they're not that
no.
aware.
I don't think so.
Because we're located in D.C., I think a lot of people search police complaints, see an office in D.C., and then
right.
think we're a
federal.
National
mm-hmm.
federal office.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
And
I know
so,
yeah.
but
mm-hmm.
that, so it's
yeah.
people from
right.
all
everywhere.
Over.
Yeah. And I think that if people... know that it's Park Police, then they may call us and say, you know,
mm-hmm.
hey, do you have information or do you guys have jurisdiction or whatever? So.
Okay.
And I don't know if it would be helpful for other board members, but would it be possible to add the referrals, the number of referrals we receive from MPD to this chart so we can see, I'd be curious
yeah,
to see what we're receiving
helpful.
From
yeah.
MPD and what we're referring back to MPD, if that makes sense.
You mean the number of complaints we receive from them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we have on here the referrals we send.
We certainly track all
mm-hmm.
of
yeah.
them.
Yeah. And so not all, and some of those referrals we don't get from them initially. We get other, and you know, online or whatever. So,
sure.
yeah. So, okay. But,
And some of them are filed at both places too.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, there's a little bit of weeding out
mm-hmm.
involved,
right.
you know.
Like, it's not uncommon for us to get an ISS you know, a referral from MPD, but then also the person went online and found the link with us, so we've already got it.
Well, and particularly for me, and I'm sure the other board members too, with the implementation of the NEAR Act, I'm just curious as to what the volume looks like on our end.
Yeah, and we
especially when we have such a huge increase.
Right. Yeah. We had our research analyst dig into it. You did that once, Matt.
I've done that a couple times, actually.
Yeah, and we've had him try to, because we obviously everybody's interested in where the increase is from, and if I'm not mistaken, really the MPD referrals account for 25% or 30% of the increase. Is that right, or is it more now? Or
what? That was
last time you looked
more
at?
Now. That was when we looked back in like March, February or March. I think I was looking at it today, and in the previous 3 or 4 years, we've gotten around 8 forwards from MPD per year on average. And this year, just in the first 2 quarters, we had it was either 70 or 90. I can't remember, but it was. Very large increase, and that's only half the fiscal year. I haven't run the new numbers yet, so it's a very large increase.
So hopefully at the end of next week, and when we have the year-end numbers, we'll look at it again, and we'll parse it all out, and we'll report on that. That's certainly one of our goals anyway, to try to figure that out.
And that's all going to be in the annual report as well.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because we want to, because that's going to be a primary question that everyone's going to have, so we want to provide what information we have on it.
Yeah, because it would look like on its face, it looks like we're just engaging in more
misconduct,
complaint, generating conduct. Whereas it's just that we've kind of shifted how we receive the information, we need to account for that, I think.
And a lot of the complaints are from the online. I mean, so you account for the fact that it's more accessible and it's easier. Mm-hmm. For people to go online and push send, than it would sometimes it is to download it and mail it or fax it or whatever.
The referrals are not going to account for the whole.
Yeah, it's not the whole thing.
But there's other things going on.
We saw those increases, especially when we went up to online reporting for certain crimes.
Right, and so that definitely is something we track as well to see that. So.
All right. So new business?
Oh, yeah. No more questions?
Any more questions? Sir?
On the report? Okay. If you do, feel free to contact us anytime during the week or whatever.
Mike loves to answer questions.
Yep.
He's serious.
From certain people.
From certain people.
All right, new business. We have a policy report on the agenda on consent search procedures. Alicia spent a lot of time on this, so I'll let her start it out.
Yes. So hopefully you all have had a chance to review it. I know Paul sent a couple of comments this afternoon. I was able to make a few modifications to the draft based on Paul's comments, but I didn't know if anybody else had any other comments, questions, or concerns. If anybody needs me to give a brief overview of the policy recommendation, just to jog your memory, I'm happy to do that as well.
So kind of when are you going to do over here, or do we just go to questions or comments?
I don't want to waste anybody's time if it's not needed. So does anybody need the overview? If not, then why don't we just jump right into questions and keep things moving?
Have at it.
So kind of on page 3, when I'm reading under policy concerns, and we talk about how many so far, in fiscal year 2017, we've received 45 harassment complaints, which is more than, in either year. So do we have a resolution to those as how many were actually improper? We have the complaint, but how many?
Sure. We did not go through some of them. They're over the course of the year, so some of them are still pending. They're not all. They're not all completed, so I'm sure some of them have definitely been dismissed. Some of them are still in the process of going forward, and we definitely have had several of our cases that have gone to complaint examination this year have involved consent searches or searches generally, and harassment allegations around searches. So it really would hit all of the sort of categories of disposition for a case.
Mm-hmm.
Our point in using the number of complaints that came in, and I did add, Paul had pointed out here, I did add language in here. I can pass around, actually, the drafts of the ones that have the update language. But I did add in a line here that says, of the 45 harassment complaints received by OPC, to make it clear that it's just the incoming complaints we're referring to. But the reason we used that is not just for shock value of numbers, but to even if the complaint proves to be dismissed for whatever reason it might be dismissed, it still shows that there's an increase in the concern among community members and they're coming forward with these complaints more. So that was the purpose of using those numbers. So that was why we used that and did not just go with complaints that were sustained.
Right. What struck us was that is increasing the number of people that felt that there was something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And filed a complaint.
And not necessarily saying that we have to say what is sustained, but what the dispositions are. Not that we just have to focus on, you know, how many were sustained out of the 45, but
mm-hmm.
just kind of what those dispositions are. And then when we talked about the breakdown of the 45 complaints, and we're saying that 71% African-American, 72% in 5, 6, or 7,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of... is there a way to include what that population looks like in those districts? Of course, it's going to be higher because the population in 6 and 7D is higher than African American residents or visitors are over there. Do we put that in context?
Well, these were two separate percentages. So the 71% of complainants
right.
is for the total, not just for the 5, 6, and 7D.
Or that 72% have been for incidents in 5, 6, and 7D. What do you mean when you say that it's not...
So those those two numbers are separate. So of the 100% across the district,
mm-hmm.
71% of complainants are African American.
Right.
And of the 100% of complaints in the district, 72% come from 5, 6, and 7D. So there's not a relationship
to what our population is in the district. We don't
think so? No, for the first number. Are you saying what the population lives in 6, 7D?
What our population is. To put it in context, if we're saying that it seems like, because if I read that, it seems like we're focused more on the way that that's written,
mm-hmm.
that we're focused on more on African Americans, and that's who we're actually stopping
mm-hmm.
in 5, 6, and 7. You can take the district in its entirety in 5, 6, and 7, but if you look at what the population is, it's going to be a higher population of African Americans.
In 5, 6, and 7D.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the 72% of incidents in 5, 6, and 7D, that's for all races.
Okay.
So that the second number is not by race.
So that it's just so that it's clear and it can't be misunderstood
mm-hmm.
as it's being read.
Right. So I understand what you're confusing. I don't know what would make it clearer to you. I don't know if you have a suggestion
mm-hmm.
for clarifying that, maybe just separating out into two different sentences.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could we also, while we're looking at this,
mm-hmm.
that first sentence, could we make it clear that we're talking about complaints?
In the causing further concern?
So causing further concern is observed racial, the observed racial disparities related to complaints, not
yep.
searches in general.
Mm-hmm. Complaints related to?
Yeah.
And as long as everyone's picking on everyone.
Sorry.
No, and this is my failing, not yours. You're correct. The first time I read it, I would say 5, 6, or 7 police districts, because I initially read that as
wards.
Oh, yeah.
No
words.
Problem.
Yeah.
That's easy.
I think you say police districts.
Mm-hmm.
It will prevent people like
confusion.
Me misinterpreting it.
Isn't this fun?
So fun.
And then we should go back to
micromanage.
No, that's fine, Kurt. That's why
we're yes, that's why we're doing this.
And because this will be, you know, repeated.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
You should then specifically talk about that. Right, the paragraph right before that, where we were talking about what was the disposition of 45 complaints. How do you want to specifically deal with that? While we're all sitting here, any suggestions on it?
There may not be dispositions on
that. Right.
Like she said, there's going to be
some of them,
pending.
Many of them are still pending.
Mm-hmm. But do
we, here's a question, right? Do we know, or can we look to see what the dispositions are of any and what are pending, and maybe just put a footnote to say
that's,
that of the
yeah,
45,
so maybe
right?
Because,
you know, have those 45...
Are
those 45?
We don't know. We don't know what's disposed of yet, right? We haven't checked to look
I
to
have
check.
The list of cases.
So it doesn't have to be a disposition. For me, it's like, of those 45, how many are being investigated beyond
okay.
just
mm-hmm.
intake, right?
Okay.
So you get a complaint, is it being like,
mm-hmm.
This is under our jurisdiction or whatever, whatever?
Or is it one that we looked at the videos and we determined that there was no misconduct? You know
yeah.
what I mean?
As a public member of the public here.
Oh, fun.
Oh, to watch?
To watch.
We'll see. Yes, so I will look at the 45 harassment complaints that we're referring to and at least put in a footnote that says the number that were investigated versus, well,
we should know at this point whether they're being investigated
yes.
or not.
Yeah.
We'll
know
should.
That.
We should.
And
know
then,
that.
And then, if it is something where we're close to dispositions on all of them, I mean, on what we're investigating.
Right. I'll
if
see
we're
what the numbers.
Closer than not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll see what the numbers are when we look at those, and then I can put in a footnote that adds some clarification to that number.
So, welcome. Sorry, we're just in the middle of discussing a policy report. But, yeah.
So, I'm leaving with bus traffic on my own.
No worries.
We had that same issue.
yes. My name is Angel Glover, and I filed about 3 complaints here. And I'm kind of perplexed to why the complaints that I filed waited lasted for a year. And then Ms. Angel was the chief investigator, signed off on it. That they didn't deem to be complaint. And I really want to know that, you know, I wanted to make it last week, but I was in the hospital. I really want to know how many complaints do the civilian have versus the police complaints? How many are favorable for the citizens of the District of Columbia? I feel that the 3 complaints that I filed within the last 4 or 5 years, they said they had merits and then it turned around and Ms. Angel signed off on it. I feel that this organization is biased. That's my personal opinion. And I want something to be done about it. I don't know who runs this particular organization, but I talked to my councilman about it, and I want to ensure that this doesn't happen.
Thank you for coming. I'm the director of the agency. We have the board members present here, so we're having a board member and talking about some of those very issues that you're bringing up. And talking about right now, for by way of example, we're talking about drafting a policy to ask the Metropolitan Police Department to look into and revise their procedures and how they do searches of people on the street, consent searches, just by way of one example. I know I've heard from a lot of people when I go to community meetings and things like that. Sometimes I hear the same concerns. I hope that when you had your complaints filed, you were able to have communication with the investigator and you came in and at least you were satisfied with how the investigator did their job. But we try to do a fair, thorough, and complete investigation on every complaint we have, sir. And we can look at what you filed in the past again and see if there's anything there that we need to go back, double back on. But I can tell you right now, people that are filing complaints now, at least ever since December, the last 5-6 months or so. Since then, all of our investigators in our office have access to all the body-worn cameras in MPD now. And that's helping us a lot with our investigation. So that's a new change that's going to help us do our job better. So I hope you're at least satisfied with some of the answers I'm giving you, that we're trying to do a good job. Everybody here, some of the people here are seated here are investigators, and some are citizen volunteers and board members, and we all have the same feelings as you do. We want to do a good job, and we want to hold police accountable when there's misconduct, when we want to do a good investigation. So, and that's why we're all sitting here tonight, is to try to figure out how to do that better. So we really appreciate you coming in here and offering your comments.
Well, right? I definitely appreciate you, saying that, because there are a lot of citizens and residents of the District of Columbia that feel this process with you guys is just a hoax. They feel they're not going to get nowhere with that. And, you know, it's fair to say that what I asked earlier, if what is the ratio or what is the percentage from the civilian complaints versus the police complaints, you know, and that would be a little bit more forthcoming to see that. Because the first thing you do, they say, well, if you're not satisfied with a resolution with you guys, then you can go to the Metropolitan Police for appeal. And the process tends to not work out, and even if you go to the, and not unless you go to the Deputy Mayor for Public Safety. So, you know, I wanted to definitely be here for, not just for myself, but the other citizens of the District of Columbia to ensure that the process is going more impartial than what it has been.
Yeah, we appreciate those comments. And by the way, a lot of that information, too, we put in our published reports that we put online, and I can give you information for that later. But even that question you've asked is always in our regular periodic reports that we put on our website. And I'll after the meeting, we can help you find that and give that to you.
Thank you.
All right. Sure.
And I would, too, if you have time. I'm the commander of the 1st Police District.
Yes, ma'am.
So I have a command. And I want you to understand that I'm sitting here and that I know my counterparts within MPD. We want to make sure that we get it right. You know, if there's something that we have done that was not within policy, or if it's something that we've done to make you all feel a certain way, any citizen, not just you, we definitely want to correct that. So we want to hear back from you. I don't want you to ever think that we don't want to hear what you have to say. That's why we publish our cell phone numbers. We respond to our emails because we want to make sure that we get it right. So if we can chat afterwards, I would like to do that as well. Okay.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Should we return to our policy discussion?
Yeah. I think, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, are there any more concerns what we were talking about?
There was only, no, not.
Okay,
not
new section.
And I think, well, the next page, yeah. And what I wanted to say, when I was reading this, I get the point, and you all are correct, that we need to make sure that we're building better relationships and that the community trusts us, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we all get that, absolutely. The last comment that I had, though, is that first sentence on the fourth page when it says every step forward in community policing is offset by two steps backwards whenever a law-abiding person is faced with a decision to comply with an officer's request to search their person, belonging, vehicle, or home. You don't necessarily mean everybody that we come in contact with, do you? When you say law-abiding, because that would be an assumption. You know, those interactions result in lawful arrests,
mm-hmm.
and we find guns and contraband and all of
mm-hmm.
those good things. So when you say law-abiding person, you're not talking about every contact. Okay.
No.
I just wanted to make sure. Because it's important what we do. These searches that we, when we get a consent search, or, you know, when
right.
we're out there and we're trying to, I think we just want to make sure that we all remember that protect and serve.
Yes.
That's what we're trying to do out there.
Yeah, and we tried to make clear in the report that we understand the importance
mm-hmm.
of consent searches and the ability that it gives law enforcement officers to do their job. So we're not
mm-hmm.
saying that consent searches should be
okay.
banned. Or disallowed, but just that there should be protections in place, keeping in mind that the subjects of these consent searches have constitutional rights that they may or may not be aware of.
And I think one of the things, too, that I think we miss in this, we point to an order, and, you know, we say that it's not adequate, but our training...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we take into consideration the amount of training that the officers get on searches, Fourth Amendment, and all. That's what all of this is.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see where we took that into consideration in this policy recommendation, that there's a lot of training that goes into that.
I mean,
We didn't account for our training. This is all
training.
Training. Most of this is training.
Right. A few issues. We've always had issues getting access to training materials from MPD, so it's hard for us to evaluate. And then additionally, officers who've been on the force for a number of years do come into our office for interviews for various different and give us incorrect explanations of what they were doing in terms of consent and gaining consent. So that causes concern with the ongoing training. We understand officers definitely have a large amount of training at the beginning of their career, but then the continued training is not as much. I mean, they're not going to the academy for multiple weeks every year. It's not the same amount of training, nor would we expect that.
I mean, I was going to say, I don't think that we don't account for the training in here at all. We don't account for it in here at all.
Right.
Whether or not we agree that them going to the academy for a week and the copious amounts of online training that they're doing, I don't think that should be discounted. I don't think we should discount that.
And I don't. And nowhere do we discount training or
kind of. We don't say anything.
We don't mention
about
training.
It,
and
then
again,
we are discounting it.
It was. Right? It was. But it's also a function of we can't state anything about the training when we don't have
it. So you guys
didn't
get any information on the training?
No.
Well, yes, a couple things on that, too. We did ask MPD for their response, and they gave us a written response. That's one thing, and it did not include that. But the other thing about it is it's a policy recommendation to improve the policy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the training should reflect the policy, obviously, on one or the other. If there is all of that training going on, and if there is, I'm not saying there isn't, but
right,
since there is all that training going on, that's not reflected in the policy. The policy is very minimal at best compared to the other departments we looked at, and it doesn't reflect all of that thing. So that's one of the points, I guess, is that the policy really needs to reflect the training.
The policy probably won't, because the training is ongoing.
Yeah.
I mean,
And I don't think
the policy would. Yeah.
We wouldn't expect the policy to be a 30-page training manual, but the policy is so limited that it provides barely any guidance at all, and the policy can also refer officers to their training, and it does not do that.
Yeah, the policy would not, as written now, would not meet any accreditation standard, number one, and it would not meet any consent decree standard that DOJ requires of other police departments that are under, that was put under consent decree standards. And it's, we looked at the comparisons too of other departments. So I think that's the idea was, we'd like the policy developed, and if there is training, that's good. We need that. Mm-hmm. But what we're just doing here is making a policy recommendation, not a training recommendation, I guess is a shorthand way of saying it. And the other thing we found, too, one last thing that just came to mind, was in some of these cases, when we ask officers about to explain it, they don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So if there is training going on, maybe it's not, maybe there's some improvements the department can make, but we're not in a position to evaluate whether the training's right or not. That's really for those training experts at MPD. We're strictly restricting ourselves just to what the written policy says in this recommendation. So.
From my perspective, having an updated policy that's also specific is important in terms of accountability, because even with the best training, every so often there's going to be a bad actor, and if the policy isn't specific enough, there's nothing concrete to hold the bad actor accountable for their choices. So I think this is also really important for oversight.
No, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but what I feel like one of my responsibilities is to shed light on what is actually. I understand we have general orders that are, we might have a general order that's older than me.
Mm-hmm.
We probably do, but I would be remiss in my obligation, to sitting on this board and to being a member of the department if I did not give you the information or sit on the information that I know exists. So that is where we are. Do we? I agree
that we can have a policy that is updated, but I disagree that we have officers out here that just don't know what they're supposed to be doing, or they haven't received training to, I mean, well, there are some that don't, but on you know, overall. So it is, I do take that responsibility seriously. So I am going to bring those discussions to this table when we have these, especially policy discussions.
We appreciate that.
Hmm?
I said we appreciate that. We do.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, they're all good questions. It's a good discussion. So.
Are there any other changes that anyone would like to discuss? I have my pen ready.
Now, those are the things that stood out to me when I read this.
Okay.
I would move adoption of the proposed policy report as revised.
Is there a second? I second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 It's approved pending revisions.
Pending revisions.
Mm-hmm. So, Alicia, on the timing then, do you think you could have the revisions done so that we can publish this on Monday?
Before
the end of the fiscal year.
Then yes. It'll definitely, I need our research analyst to pull some stuff for me. But I will be in the office tomorrow, and assuming we can get those pulled, I should be able to get this done tomorrow.
I mean, I think it's realistic. I'd like to do it, you know, next week.
Yes.
But I just want to make sure that Monday is a realistic day, because typically that's the better day to release a policy.
You know about my reservation, Friday news release.
Yes, right.
Unless you're trying to hide.
We will not be releasing this tomorrow.
So it's Tuesday about this.
But yes, I would say Monday is possible, definitely by Tuesday. I guess the question for you, Mr. Chairman, is do you want the revised version circulated before we release it?
How do other board members feel? I think I'm fine without seeing a revised version. I mean, I would like to receive the revised version,
yes.
But I don't need to review it again.
And approve it.
And approve it, yeah.
I would like to see it also, but I don't think we need another vote on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, not another vote.
Yeah, we
vote.
Voted,
yes. No,
so.
We will. I will send it all to you.
Thank
personally.
You.
Thank you.
Good. That completes item 7A. We're all now on item 7B of the new business agenda. We have two complaint examiners. We haven't put under the statute, complaint examiners must, like mediators, must be approved by the board. We haven't had any new complaint examiners for
about 2 years
at least, so it may be a new procedure for some people on the board. What we did was, well, I'll let you explain it, Alicia. Why don't you explain the process and how we went about this.
So we posted a public notice that we were seeking applications for complaint examiners. That public notice included all the required qualifications, which are having a general reputation for competence, impartiality, and integrity, residing within the district, be a member in good standing of the District of Columbia Bar, have been a licensed attorney in any jurisdiction of the U.S. for at least 5 years, and have litigation or arbitration experience. So those are the qualifications. The posting was up for about a month. We had it publicly posted on our website. We sent it out to several listservs. The DC Bar sent it out among on their listserv to lawyers in the city who are a member of the DC Bar. And we received several applications. I did an initial round of phone screening interviews with about 8 of the applicants, and then Mike and I brought in the final 2 candidates who we are presenting to you all. We found them to meet all of the required qualifications and, in fact, exceed the required qualifications. And they both had a commitment to public service and viewed this position as one of public service and as a way of serving the District of Columbia where they both reside. So I'm happy to go into further details about each of them. I know you all reviewed or were sent their application packages, so I don't want to review everything they did. But the first candidate is Rebecca Goldfrank. She is currently the director of the Families First program at the Children's Law Center, but she has actually been an attorney at the Children's Law Center since 2006. So she's been a staff attorney and a supervising attorney before becoming the director. So she has a long-standing commitment to serving the District of Columbia and the children of the District of Columbia, and has a lot of litigation experience through her work there, which makes her amply qualified to be a complaint examiner. She does a lot of writing in her current position, and seemed very exciting for the legal analysis that would very excited about the legal analysis that would be required of a complaint examiner.
Yeah. So when there's a dispute in family court about child custody, she's one of the lawyers that's in there every day in the courtroom, mm-hmm. arguing, filing briefs. And she has a lot of litigation experience. And we did do personal interviews of both of the
yes.
individuals, too. They came into the office, and we did interviews with them. So I just wanted to add that.
Yes. And the second candidate, Laura Brown, is at the Department of Justice in the Environment and Natural Resources Division currently, where she has a lot of litigation experience, writing a lot of motions for the government in terms of the Clean Water Act and other complicated environmental cases. That's all in federal court, but she is out of the main justice here in D.C., and she's been there since 2014. What was of great interest in Laura's application, she has significant clerking experience, so working for judges. She did that in Camden, New Jersey, for two different judges, and in her experience there, she was working with those judges on writing judicial opinions, which is very similar to the type of writing that the complaint examiners do, being that impartial decider for the case. So Laura has a great deal of experience with that aspect of the law. So I'm happy to answer any further questions about both of these candidates, either of these candidates. But Dr. Coben and I put forth both of them to be approved as complaint examiners.
I was very impressed with both, and so I would move adoption of the recommendation.
Do you want a second?
I withdraw my motion.
I
have to
do my first move there.
You have an opportunity, you have an opportunity here.
I'm withdrawing my motion.
And
you're
I'm
up.
Moving. I'm voting to move.
Okay.
How am I supposed to say that?
Move to accept the recommendation.
Move to accept the recommendations as is.
And I'm going to second my motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The complaint examiners are so adopted.
They will be very excited to hear that.
Right.
They are very impressive.
They look good.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
We have two more impressive people to talk about briefly, and that's item 7C, which is two new mediators. Were you involved in that process at all?
No, I was not.
Our deputy director was involved in the process, but she had a last-minute emergency and couldn't be at the meeting tonight. So I could give you a general overview, but again, these are people that we solicited through various channels, the mediation channels, applications, and brought them in. Rochelle Howard conducted in-person interviews with them, and both of them, I believe, are well qualified. Their resumes are in your packet. They both have a lot of experience doing mediations, and we're really just looking to bring a few more mediators on board for the, just so that we have a good rotation and a good diverse pool. So I recommend approval of both of these individuals.
They're both from the same firm, is that by accident or?
No, it's by design.
Okay.
They're both interested.
What was the design behind it?
Well, they both are, the firm that, the section of the firm that they're in is a mediation section.
Okay.
So
that's helpful.
And Cooley Law, where is that, Cooley Law? Yeah.
Cooley's in Michigan.
Michigan?
I believe
yeah.
it is,
yeah. Okay. I move to approve the mediators. Cousins.
Bobby's turn to second.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The mediators are so approved.
All right, thank you. Last item on the new business is a administrative rules revision that we've assembled and circulated. Alicia, you're the center of the universe tonight.
I have a lot on the agenda for you all. So the administrative rules, so this would be approving this being published for comment. So right now we are not asking you all to approve these as final. Changes can and likely will still be made over the course. As when they're published, they will be open for 30 days for public comment. And that's public. Anybody who wants to make comment, the rules in the District of Columbia do not mandate that we directly respond to any comment. They do mandate that we review all comments. So it does not mean...
Meaning the staff?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You all don't have to review all comments. So we will review all comments to see if there is anything that we think should be modified based on those comments, or maybe it'll bring up new issues that had not been considered. But so this is presented to you all. This the Office of Police Complaints administrative rules have not been updated since 2002. They are actually the CCRB administrative rules, which shows how outdated they are. So this update is sorely needed. Again, many of the changes were in response to the NEAR Act, which mandated several changes. Others were updates based on technology, the fact that we now have an online complaint form, various other systems that have been put in place since 2002.
Whether the name is different.
The name being a main thing.
Minor details.
So this incorporated all of those changes. I know it's a pretty dense document to read through. I don't know if anybody had any specific questions or things that they did not like about these.
So I had two very minor edits.
Please.
So under 2.1, you're all going to be like, you are so anal retentive. Under 2.115.5, there is no period before the last sentence starts.
Oh my goodness, do you have any idea?
Wait, what was it? 2.1?
Page 8.
Yeah. This is really how... to see how nuanced I am.
No, because let me tell you, my eyes went cross-eyed reviewing this. So
under the definitions section, under excessive use of force, framework spelled incorrectly under number 5.
Thank you.
Yes, look, you're like...
Policy changes?
I actually read. Okay, so there we go. I read everything. And one
I
of the,
wanted to. I've never seen those.
Sorry.
I told because you. Your eyes started crossing.
You
like
so long,
day,
you start going
off.
Cross-eyed. I would have to put this down, you know, walk away, come back. It was a lot.
Right, so I told you I was anal retentive
in
this. And one of the things I discussed with Mike after reading all of this, I thought it was great, a great refresher about what the office does, and particularly reminding us of aspects that as the board we don't get to see on a regular basis, particularly the complaint examiner piece, which it was good to know that complaint examiner hearings are public, so I was expressing to Mike an interest in possibly observing one in the future, and I would encourage other board members to do the same.
We can definitely, you know, we did actually have one last week on the 15th, but that was the first one that has been held in about a year and a half. Again, to Mona's point with the body-worn camera, that is also making... our complaint examiners have less need for a hearing because there's not as much in dispute. But we can certainly keep you all posted
just
when those happen.
Yeah,
it's been a year and a half since the last time there was a hearing.
Yeah. Why don't you, can you notify the board about the next one?
Mm-hmm.
Let us try to adjust.
Yeah.
I will say, though, the two, not to change the subject, but the two cases that you sent out today were really good reminders.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Because you don't see that part of
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not only that, one of the cases, it was mine. It was from my district.
Right.
And so it's way different from the story that they told.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
There's body worn camera.
So the other thing I mentioned to Mike and that I thought I'd mention for the board itself was I asked Mike the question, do most complainants have representation at complaint examiner hearings, because it says they can represent themselves, so I was curious on that. So if you wanted
And they all have representation.
Yes.
We have a program with a private
Arnold
law firm, and they provide attorneys free of charge to all the complainants.
Well,
as long as the complainants cooperate with that attorney. And the officers are...
A steward?
The officers have an attorney through the union, yes. There was an attorney there for the officers. I forget the name of the law firm, but the union has a retainer with the firm and brings them on. And Arnold and Porter has some very eager young associates who jump at the chance to represent the complainants. And that has been a good partnership. They're very eager to help out with that.
They've won pro bono awards through DC Bar for the representation.
Nice. And what firm was it?
Arnold and Porter.
It's a big one.
Small law.
They're in that big new building on Mass
Ave.
The entire building, by the way.
That's nice. And I think the last question I asked you was related to how many of the complaint examiner findings get appealed.
Right.
Go to the appeal panel.
Yes, I can answer that. It is rare. It'll be in the annual report. We had one complaint examination take place in FY17. We actually just got a request today for another review panel. But I would say one to two a year is probably...
If that,
the average.
So what he's asking is... when we send a case to the police chief for discipline, how many times has he disagreed with that complaint examiner decision? So it's one or two times a year.
Yeah.
Then it gets sent back, and when it gets sent back, then it goes to a three-person panel.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what's actually been interesting, at least in the ones that I've seen in my time here, which is these two, the chief has been specific. It's not the entire merits determination that he's disagreeing with. It is specific allegations allegations against specific officers, but not the entirety of the merits determination.
Great. Thank you. Sorry, I have all these questions.
Going back to proposed rules, I'm not an expert on the Administrative Procedures Act or district equivalent, so I don't want to complicate things or... But I thought there would be some merit in addition to publishing it for public comment if this could be sent to some of our community partners, less expecting them to make changes, but I think it's educational if that's not inappropriate.
I don't think it would be inappropriate. We will have a link to the DCMR when it gets published.
Yeah.
And I don't think it would be...
Or the other way to do it is once it's final is just to send it out to them.
Well, that we would certainly want to do.
Okay.
I think when they're final, we'll do a normal publicity push.
Maybe that's the better thing to do.
And make sure there's a public release, send it around to all of our stakeholders.
Right.
We would definitely want everyone to be aware. Not that this will necessarily have big implication for changes for most folks, but
with us, it's educational as to what if nothing's changed,
it's a nice refresher.
It reminds you of.
So I think once they're final, we will certainly do that.
And the timing on this is the statutory minimum is a 30-day publication period. What we're asking you to do tonight is to approve this draft so we can publish it on the DC Register for comments. And we plan to wait longer than the minimum 30-day period, at least till we meet again, or shortly before that, rather, to leave the comments open for a little bit longer than just the 30 days. So that there's ample opportunity for people to contribute. And then at our next meeting, whenever that might be in November 30th right now, then at that point we would incorporate the comments if necessary, if we get comments, and if they need to be incorporated, and ask for your approval of the rules in the final format and publish them.
And just so everyone's aware of the timing, at this point, the earliest this could be published would be 2.5 weeks from now. The DCMR comes out on Monday, but you need to have it in the Thursday of the week prior. So at this point, it wouldn't make it in for 2 weeks at least, even if everything is approved tonight. I will alert everybody once it is in the DCMR, everyone on the board.
Thank
I can you. Alert you all when it is there. But again, there will be a delay because they need to receive stuff and have adequate time to get it in their formatting for publication.
So I move to approve the administrative rules for publication as amended with the two minor grammatical edits that I had. Is there a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
They are so approved. One last thing before we close. One of the things that Mike and I talked about, and it's great that you mentioned the community partnership, is I asked Mike to put on the agenda for the November meeting kind of a rundown, a reminder of what the partnership program is, and just kind of give the board an opportunity to learn a refresher on, and for those members who are new, what it is and kind of how we're operating with it, and give us a chance to ask questions and that sort of thing. So,
right.
Did we have in the outreach, the one thing I wanted to say, for my National Night Out kickoff, I do appreciate you all being represented. The board was there and
right.
represented. So one of your community events, I hope it was on that list.
Yes, it is. It was on there. We had, let's see.
Nikisha,
Bob,
and Nydia, and Denise.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Doug. Yeah. Yeah, they did a great job, too.
That,
and
yeah.
And I understand there's a pretty good turnout, too.
It's a great turnout.
Yeah.
It was a great turnout. It was a great event. And I was pleased. I was tickled to have them there. That was nice.
That's great. And they got to meet the mayor.
We did. I think they got to meet every. It was the official kickoff event for the city, so I think they got to meet everybody. City administrator was there.
So if there are no further comments or issues, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
So second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The meeting is adjourned at 7:30. Thank you all.
Thank you.